Okay, so let's have a look at this. I'm not going to do the Python piece. Basically, you either get a typo or you don't get a typo, right? So you bang your head against your typos and then it works. Ah! So I'll just show, since we haven't looked too much at burp fuzzing, I'll just show that. Let me make that full screen. So I've already got this one set up. You know how to get a request in there. You've done that before. I just, in the browser, sec542.org/python index.php, id equal 1, right? And I did that through burp, and so here it is. So, right-click on this guy, send to intruder, goes orange, let's check that, check our positions. Looks good by default, right? The default that it selects for injection looks good. Attack type. We got attack type, sniper's just fine, right? For this one, we've really only got one position, so one payload will be fine. One payload, what do we want our payload to be? Well, 1 through 100 is what we were supposed to do with this script. So let's check out the payload types. We haven't really done too much with this, or at least not overtly. Going down, you got numbers. Now, one thing that's nice, did anybody try to do this with Zap? Anyone? Okay. I'll show it to you just so you get an idea. But sequential numbers from, so what are you starting with? Let's start with 0, and let's go to 100. And then step 1. Okay, so we see up here, payload count of 101, request count of 101. So 0 through 100, that works. Now, I'm going to leave this as it is. It's just going to be straight integers. But imagine if you had something like an employee ID, right, an employee ID field. So could do 1, 4, right? Or you could say 4 and 4, right? So min digits 4, max digits 4. We don't have any decimal, but so you see 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, right? And then it's going to take into account your step. So just a heads up there. We don't need that, because we're just going to count regularly. All right. So that looks good. Start attack. It tells you it's going to be slow. And what do you see? Well, hopefully you notice the pattern. We apparently like odd things, so that's not terribly surprising. We really should, in all honesty, we should totally add something special for 42, though, shouldn't we? Weren't you kind of expecting that at this point? Like, there totally should have been an Easter egg in there. And I feel like that's just it's a missed opportunity, isn't it? At this point, you expect a certain level of geekery, right? So, I know. We should try harder. All right, we got that. That's fine. And you can tweak it. That's pretty straightforward. Let's look at this with Zap, though. I've already got it set up for us to make it easier. Here's my request. I've got ID equals 0 in this case. So I highlight it. Let me start it over just so it will do its default thing. So I've got my request highlighted. Right click. Well, double click. Give it to me. Show me there. All right. So got this guy. Right click. Let me say fuzz. It's already, much like burp did, it's already highlighted for me the position. So I don't have to go in here and highlight it and edit. Go in here and highlight it and add. I can just hit payloads, add. So file fuzzer. JBro Fuzz has a bunch of different fuzzing options, and it's got number system, so that looks good. And here we go, decimal. All right. So that looks fine. Let's start the fuzzer. Wow, that was fast. Man, that's crazy fast compared to burp. But it also didn't give us a lot of options there, did it? And it just did the, well, decimal. So it did 0 through 9. It didn't do exactly what we wanted. And it doesn't have built into it a lot of that JBro fuzz. That's just a straight list. It kind of treats everything like a straight list. They've got an experimental regex, but then you got to know regex, right? So, I mean, there's that. Okay, if you know regex, that's fine. But for most folks, burps Burp's ability to just pick different kind of pre-populated approaches to payloads, and then also its payload processing makes it quite powerful. So we would have to do something special to get that working properly with our fuzzer. So just a heads up there to show you some of the difference. Now, of course, you know, it's not hard to generate. You can use a script. You can do a script directly from within Zap to build out the numbers. You could use a script locally to populate it with numbers. Not that hard, but still, it feels a little immature compared to Burp's ready-made options for processing these. All right. So you're going to go pretty immediately into a lab. We're now looking at a bit more specialized tools here. We're looking at vulnerability scanners, web app vulnerability scanners. Before we get into general purpose web app vulnerability scanner of W3AF, we've got WP Scan. This is a WordPress scan, WP Scan. It is a vulnerability scanner that is just specific to WordPress and WordPress only. WordPress is incredibly popular, very commonly found, and it often has security issues. And importantly, the security issues that you find are not just in WordPress. They're most commonly in WordPress plugins and extensions, right? So your WordPress install might be up to date, but your WordPress plugins might not be up to date. And we see that. We see a lot of compromises of WordPress via those plugins, right? Extra little added code that isn't very secure, that isn't patched and updated as well as it should be. So WP Scan, it's sponsored by Sucuri. It's free and open source. And one thing to pay close attention to, it will laugh at you if you do it without having ever run it. But in the real world, right, you would run wp-scan --update. It checks in online to grab the latest and greatest version of the database. So that's nice. We don't have to constantly update wp-scan. We just run one little command while we're connected to the internet, and it'll get the latest and greatest version of the knowledge base, right? That tells it about updates, about patches, about lack of patches. So you've got an exercise where you're going to use WordPress scan, WP scan, to identify a busted WordPress install. You're going to look at the results of WP scan and have it guide you to using a off-the-shelf exploit out of ExploitDB. So WP scan as our starting point, looking, identifying a vulnerability, using those results to lead you to successful exploitation. So here's your challenge. Your challenge is, here's your target, www.sec542.org/WordPress. You're gonna run WP scan against the target install. Look at the results, leverage the local ExploitDB install to find an exploit for the referenced vulnerability. So it's going to give you details. It's going to identify for you the vulnerability. You go to ExploitDB, and you find, or ExploitDB on your local system, and you find the exploit code for this. You will need to customize that ExploitDB. You'll need to customize it so that it's actually going to target. You need to customize it for your environment. We'll just leave it that way. Okay. Customize it for your environment. If it's successful, it will come back with the admin account's password hash. You will then crack the admin account's password hash using a local install of John the Ripper. So we're building, you know, this is a more complete kind of lab walkthrough, right? You're going to crack the hash using John the Ripper. You're going to then log in to the target with compromised credentials. So soup to nuts, from vulnerability identification to using off-the-shelf exploit to get password hash, to crack password hash, to then log in to WordPress. Cool? Then, as an extra aside, to show you a nice little hacking path, right? This is great. This is awesome that this works, but you didn't have to do any of this. because you have already compromised the back-end database and you have sufficient privileges to that back-end database to simply spit out the hash. So I want you to use SQL Map as kind of an extra path through this. I want you to use SQL Map and your previously compromised vulnerability, right? So you can use sec542.org, SQLIPHP. You could use the DBWA approach as well if you wanted to, but use something that's going to get you into this back-end database and pull out the password hashes yourself. So yeah, you did the vulnerability scan, all that exploitation, all that cracking, but you can kind of fast path it to pull out the information yourself. All right, so run through this lab. Let me know if you have any questions. And of course, flip the page if you want the step-by-step. And I'm gonna show the alternate form, the shortcut cheat form, just because that's more fun. So this is a SQL map, and this is one of the SQL injection flaws that we've seen before. So just showing you this technique since we give you a SQL map lab, but we didn't walk through all these little pieces. So I'm gonna say, show me the databases. So dash dash DBs, and it spits out all the databases. Now, all right, so I am interested in the WordPress database. So I say dash capital D, WordPress, and then dash dash tables. Now, in truth, once you know that it's WordPress, WordPress has a particular I just kicked over like 12 Red Bulls. It has a particular schema that's expected, that's default. So we can do dash T, WP underscore users, so telling it what users we're interested in, right? It's going to spit out and tell us, hey, do you want to store hashes to a temporary file for eventual processing with other tools? In this case, yes, right? We do. I don't want it to try to hash, okay? But now I think I had you do it so that you just looked at the ID of one, but you can see it spits out, not in the easiest to read format, but it tells us where it actually logged the information, which is right there. So do we have numeric on here? Yes, we do. Oh, okay. No, go away. So numeric, we can do home student.sql map, right? Just to make it easier to read. Dump WordPress WP. So now it's easier to read for us, okay? So here's the user pass. Right? So there's a hash right there. Okay? So we got that guy. And echo tack in. Oh, Seth failed. Did not pass. Okay. There we go. Into to slash temp slash hash. All right, so that's the password hash. Now, there's different ways of going about this. I had you do it the login way, so you have to be able to crack the password. Now, one of your colleagues was having trouble with John the Ripper, and so took this hash and slapped it into, well, you could slap it into Google, right? You could first slap it into Google, because if it's an unsalted hash, then Google is a really fast cracker. You went to CrackStation, didn't you? Went to CrackStation. There's a number of different free online rainbow tables that you can just search. And so he searched for this rather than cracked it, right? Which is just kind of fun. So it should work with opt, John, run, John, okay, and opt, John, run, John, slash temp hash. MD5-raw or raw-MD5? Which one? All right. Spits it out and says, foobar. Right? Or you can just do, oh, I deleted too much. Temp hash, if you didn't see it, and a lot of people don't. It doesn't really want it in. What just happened here? Oh, I wonder if it doesn't have rights to, I wonder if it doesn't have permissions running as the normal user. It might not have permissions to write the john.pot file. Maybe it's trying to write it to a different location. All right, foobar, there it is. So that's your password, and you can see what the user is. It's admin, and that's the default. So now we should be able to go in to the WordPress install and just log directly in. So that's where I was. And we can go into the actual WP login. Okay. And admin foobar. Yay. And now we're logged in. Okay. So now you can do things like mean things, like mess up their blog and stuff. All right. So that's not the WP scan approach, but WP scan is kind of straightforward. It spits out a vulnerability. And then I did want to show this alternate path, because I see this with a heck of a lot of regularity. Finding an application that has an easy SQL injection flaw, but they don't actually care about that part of it. They don't care about that application. And being able to use that application's back end to gain access to other information. That's an extremely common technique where they have a shared back end database server, and there's multiple databases on that same server, but the ID that you present with is privileged enough that it can access other databases. So they present with highly privileged account, which is lame but true. All right? So next up, let's look at a more general purpose vulnerability scanner, and that one is going to be W3AF. In truth, we've already seen, or at least talked about, a vulnerability scanner that you've got available to you, which is Zap. Zap has ActiveScan. Zap ActiveScan is fine, but it doesn't have nearly the number of or the comprehensive checks that a more feature complete vulnerability scanner has. And W3AF is one that has quite a few vulnerability checks. It's free and open source, written in Python, created by Andres Riancho, who is now at Rapid7, and I think it shows on the splash screen now that it's a Rapid7 sponsored project. So he works for Rapid7 and does application security and helps guide that aspect of Rapid7 scanning. But W3AF is still free and open source, and written in Python. It's got a GUI, and that's great, and we start there, but it also has, in addition to the GTK GUI, it also has a console so that you can configure and run W3AF from the command line. In truth, I don't think you're ever going to initially build a config from the command line, but what you can do is from the GUI, you can go and see the details of the scan profile, copy it, and then reuse that at the console. The beautiful thing about this, about the console, is that each of these words that you type are individual commands, and you can take all of those effectively as a script. So you can easily run W3AF in just kind of batches. So you can have it as a scheduled, as a cron job, scheduled task, however you want to do it, and have this scan run on a routine basis, right? So you could also figure out what a good scan profile looks like and pre-populate this and have it set up so that, you know, someone in testing can very easily kick this off and run it. Against applications that are on their way to production or that are going through QA or however you want to do it. But I like that. I like the console scripting aspect of W3F. I would never start there because it's not intuitive at all. So I would start with the GUI to build out your scan profile and check the boxes you want to check, and then spit that out for the scripting purpose if you want to run this repeatedly over time. The real meat of W3F is its plugin infrastructure. Lots of different plugins that this is where we'll find things like our vulnerability checks, but there are also plugins that are kind of meta scanning plugins. So it's not just about, the plugins are not just vulnerability checks. They might be plugins for trying to evade detection, trying to bypass filtering. So we'll see that there's quite a few different types of W3F plugins. We've got the crawl plugins. As you would expect, this is associated with how do we actually crawl the application? How do we spider the application? How do we figure out what are all the entry points into the application? So W3F is going to typically crawl the application before it's ever going to start the scanning. So there are some extra plugins here for guiding that approach to ensure or increase the likelihood of success. And not all of these are associated with directly interacting with the application. You'll see in this that there are some that are more so recon, where you can use open source intelligence. It can reach out and use internet searches to determine potential targets and paths. I mentioned the potential for evasion. There are evasion plugins that will try to make it so W3F is more subtle. It's not going to be subtle, but it can be guided through the evasion plugins to try to bypass some basic filtering. So this is going to do typically some form of encoding where it's appropriate. So it'll encode the traffic in efforts to bypass blacklist plugins. The real meat are found under the audit plugins. And this is where we find our vulnerability scan checks. So this is where you're going to find your SQL injection, your cross-site scripting, your command injection, your RFI, LFI. Those are all going to be found under the audit plugin. So that's where the bulk of our real interest in W3F is found, is under these guys. Not everything is directly related to a vulnerability check. Some of them just seem kind of more one-off oddities. But this is where the real bulk of our plugins are going to come from. We've also got the grep plugins. Grep plugins are for searching, and searching typically searching in all the results through interaction. So some good ones here can be associated with trying to find any potential usernames from all the interaction. So this is one of those kind of meta plugins where it can search across all the data. And it doesn't even, the grep plugins quite often don't cause any new stimulus. They don't cause any new requests to be sent. It's just really parsing and processing the output of your other requests. So it looks at the requests and responses and can look for types of technologies being used, can look for email addresses, can try to look for usernames. So it's kind of, to me, I liken it a little bit to the passive vulnerability discovery or passive techniques, passive scanning techniques that you find in Zap and also in Burp. Okay? Not as much associated with vulnerabilities, but it is totally passive if it's a grep plugin. We have the brute force plugins that are mostly dealing with trying to brute force authentication. So you can feed this information from those grep plugins. It has cool style functionality, CEWL style functionality. Remember that one? That was that spider that would build a word list. So it has that style of functionality where it can build a word list based on the site. You can also use those grep plugins that we just talked about to send it email addresses and potential usernames as input into the brute force plugins. It right now handles basic authentication and some forms-based authentication as well. Okay. So you kick off W3AF, and assuming, let's say, you're going to use the GUI, and I would start using the GUI to build out my profile. It does come with some pre-populated profiles. And those can be used as a starting point, but really I would recommend that you customize them a bit and see what works. And it honestly could even be what works for your particular application. You will absolutely encounter the case where W3F just pukes all over the screen when you try to run it against your app. It will just sit there, it will never finish, it will never run to completion, or it will just fall over and die. And that's pretty common with even big, nasty, very expensive commercial scanners, where they just choke on an application, they can't handle it well, or they get stuck in some little loop and don't realize that they're failing and just flailing miserably. So just be mindful of that. You will need to look at the details of the results and possibly turn some plugins off. Possibly set up some exclusions and say, oh wow, don't go anywhere near that path because you'd get stuck in some little hole and never crawl out of it again. Or you seem to always choke whenever you use this plugin against this application. And it requires that level of attention sometimes. So we can start with a profile that's already populated. We can also build our own custom profile. And all that's really involved with the profile is going through and selecting the various plugins. And those plugins that have the little pencil beside them, that means it's a plugin that you can, maybe not necessarily have to, but you can provide some configuration. Like the classic easy example is your output plugins. You can select the output plugin and tell it what you want to name the file or where you want to store the file. Well, that's kind of obvious, but that's what the pencil indicates. That's its heads-up indicator. Okay. Once you're done tweaking your profile, you've built out a new one, you want to save it, then you can use that profile. You populate your target, you've saved it. This will give you the ability to hit start, right? You'll see a play button there. The results, you'll get results, you'll get log information. So you see scan config, log, results, exploit. You will get some information while it's running. Even if it hasn't completed yet, you can go into the log, you can see some results. Of course, once it's done, you can see many results. It's got the KB browser, the knowledge base browser, and it tries to use colorization to give you some indication as to how bad it thinks it is. So obviously red is intended to mean it's worse. You'll see that W3F typically tracks the requests and response data associated with that vulnerability. So you think it's a false positive, you don't really believe it, you can't exploit it, whatever, you can go and find the request and the response. You can go find the requests and response that are associated with it. And it tells you in the details, it says, this vulnerability was found in the request with ID 3703. Gives you a little bit of details. You can also go into the request response navigator and search for 3703 to see those details, see what happened before and after and all that. Okay. One thing that's rather different about W3F than most web app vulnerability scanners is that this vulnerability scanner actually builds in the ability for you to exploit some of your flaws. So it allows you to, well, exploit the flaws and potentially get shells. It can be integrated in with SQL Map for SQL injection. It can be integrated with Beef on the cross-site scripting exploitation side. So lots of different ways of integrating it. It will list for you exploits that, it will list for you all the exploits. Some of them will be bold typefaces, those are the ones that it thinks that it has, that it thinks can be exploitable. So, all right. And some of them will give you a shell. Word of caution on the shell that it gives you, like in particular with the SQL injection, that's also true, I think, with some forms of the command injection and the DAV shell as well. It's not a for reals shell sometimes. It's kind of this emulated shell. So some of the shells that it will give you to execute something, you have to put E and then say what you want to execute, which just seems kind of dorky, right? But just a heads up there. It might not be a real shell that you're in. It might just be It might just be this emulated shell. So you've got a quick little exercise with W3AF where you're going to use the GUI. You're going to build out a scan. You're going to launch the scan, check out the results, and then you're going to exploit an OS command injection vulnerability, and then you get to use the shell. All right? So we'll just leave it right there as the no hints version, and you can start walking through it. But of course, flip the page if you don't know where W3F is installed. All right, so let's turn our attention to Metasploit. You had your joy and your success with W3AF. Now let's move into Metasploit. Metasploit, most people do not think of as a web app vulnerability scanner or a web app pen testing tool at all. This is easily the most popular penetration testing tool, and it's the single biggest Ruby project in the universe, right? More lines of Ruby code in Metasploit than any other project. Not security project, just project. It's kind of wild. It has grown and grown and grown and grown and grown, and as you probably know, it got picked up by Rapid7 and got turned into something that was turned into a commercial offering. Now we still have the framework, we still have the open source version, and that has persisted for a long time, and it's still very actively updated. Now most of us, if you have experience with Metasploit, you probably have experience with Metasploit doing this for net pen test, for network-based server-side or client-side exploitation, not for web apps. And yet, there are some web techniques. Well, if nothing else, there are a tremendous number of off-the-shelf exploits in applications that we find those vulnerabilities. Like there are WordPress exploits that are built into Metasploit. There are Drupal exploits and Joomla exploits and MediaWiki exploits. There's tons of exploits for web applications. But even other than that, I mean, that's the main reason we use Metasploit, is for exploiting known vulnerabilities. We can also use Metasploit against custom web applications. So beyond the exploitation side of things, we've got a whole host of auxiliary tools. And in the auxiliary tools, we've got more than 150 entries under auxiliary scanner HTTP. So this is for trying to find flaws, vulnerabilities, looking at versions of particular web packages. So there's quite a few things that are associated with web directly, even if we don't think of it as such. Now, one thing that we will need to do, if we're going to target, applications in Metasploit, we need to get these targets into Metasploit. For our purpose, we're not typically starting our web app pen test in Metasploit, right? That's not going to necessarily be our single source. So we've got some data that we need to get into Metasploit. So we need to, we can use its crawlers. Right, it has at least two different types of crawlers and spiders that are built into it. So auxiliary crawler, MSF crawler, and auxiliary scanner, HTTP crawler. So you point it at a site and let it do its thing. Now it's not a particularly capable web crawler. It's not gonna handle client-side heavy JavaScript by any means, but it can work pretty darn well, right? For some basic capabilities. Does not obviate the need for Burp, for Zap, for Ajax Spider, but it can work all right. A better approach, though, for our purpose is rather than letting Metasploit figure it out on its own, we can feed Metasploit the data we've already got. And this is through the DB import functionality. Now, this DB import is not just for web by any means. It's largely for taking data from, for the most part, vulnerability scanners, and then feeding them into Metasploit And then Metasploit will now be used to exploit those vulnerabilities. So dbImport supports a lot of different products, tons of them, lots of different vulnerability scanners. But you're going to see, hey, wait a second. There's a lot of directly web-related tools that it can read in. So Acunetics, AppScan, Burp, right? Burp Session. We've got NetSparker, Nikto, Nmap, Wapiti, right? Those are all directly web application. Well, Nmap, I guess, is not just web app, but it can read the results of those, import those, and now it's in Metasploit's backend database. So you start doing your exploitation, you start hitting them. Well, now you've got this data that's actually stored in the Metasploit backend database, which is really helpful. So a lot of overtly web tools are in there. And most important, I think, for us are the vulnerability scanners, but also Burp Session being listed there is quite nice. Would love it if Zap was kicking it in there, but no dice at this point. Something completely different. E.T. Efrentoris created WMAP. Now, WMAP hasn't gotten a lot of love in the past few years, but WMAP is still pretty capable. What it does is, well, it does a few things. One, by having WMAP, it's treated like a plugin or an extension, so you have to load WMAP. So load WMAP, it actually loads it in, and it can, when you do this, it can actually update the backend database so that it is more appropriate for web applications. Right? The database hosts and things like that, they're not built for web applications. But WMAP can interface with that backend database and use it and extend it for actually storing information about web applications and details that we would need that aren't as relevant to net pen test. It also includes a profile where you can use WMAP and you can just have WMAP launch attacks against all of the known vulnerabilities. You can have WMAP try to target sites that you've imported, and it will try to determine vulnerabilities, and it will try to determine vulnerabilities and store them in the backend database. So it's kind of an interesting approach. It has a number of plugins that it kicks off, and really most of them are found in Auxiliary Scanner HTTP. So it's a way of kind of automating and easing launching a lot of those auxiliary scanners at once. If you want to use this, it has a default config that's built into it, but it's not getting updated. So, but there are new auxiliary scanner HTTP modules that pop up all the time. So you will just need to update your configuration to point it at these new auxiliary scan modules and see if they can work with WMAP. And sometimes they can. Even if WMAP itself hasn't been updated, those new auxiliary scanners that pop up that are web-related might be able to work just fine as is. So we would need to update the config profile to have WMAP be able to understand that those are some scans that it can run. Another big thing, besides dbImport, we can integrate with Metasploit in other ways. Okay, so we can integrate with a number of different tools, but we're first going to go get ice cream. So there's that. So go get ice cream and take your break, and then come back and we'll talk about Metasploit's integration. Metasploit integrates with a number of key tools that we use. Beef integrates directly with Metasploit. This was mentioned before, and I said, hey, I'll show you how it works. I'll show you how it works today, day five. So Beef can hook into Metasploit and use that as a way to try to escalate privileges, to go from cross-site scripting payload to go to successful client-side exploitation, which gives us much, much better persistence capabilities. So how do we actually pull this off? It's a couple different steps. For our config, right, we go to optbeefconfig.yaml, and we say enable Metasploit. We have to change that to true. Then optbeefextensions metasploit config.yaml, right? We're going to have to put in username and password. Okay, username and password. So now, and you can do this in different orders, but in Metasploit, at the console, we're going to say, hey, you're going to use your RPC, and you're going to turn it on, and then we set the password. So 2 and 3, they just have to match. For us, it's security 542. That's what's been configured, but you know, you would go through that. 4 and 5, that's just kicking off beef and looking in the control panel. So really, it's 1, 2, and 3 that are for setting this up. In setting it to enabled equal true, and then turning on, enabling Metasploit's RPC server, RPC daemon to listen, and set it a password, and then in beef, set the same password. And that's going to make it so that you can see all of those different exploits and launch them. Unfortunately, what would be extra whiz bang awesome is if it would give you like green, orange, red on the Metasploit modules and say, hey, this one's likely to work. This one's not. We're not there yet, but, you know, matter of time, perhaps. SQL Map, we saw that SQL Map directly integrates with Metasploit. We can do it in multiple directions, though. So SQL Map can call Metasploit for exploitation to try to get a shell, to try to get a interpreter, to also do privilege escalation. So that's SQL Map calling Metasploit. Metasploit can actually is distributed with SQL Map. So Metasploit comes with SQL Map, and you can actually call it directly. So Metasploit can use SQL Map for SQL injection attacks. So it's got its own SQL Map plugin. You need to make sure that it's up to date and the current, but it allows Metasploit to leverage SQL injection to perform SQL injection attacks even if you didn't have SQL Map installed. Which for us, we're always gonna have SQL Map installed, so no big deal. But it's kind of awesome that they can both integrate forwards and backwards. The prime use case, though, and the main reason to add this to your toolkit is because of its facility with exploitation of known vulnerabilities. Not so, you know, not primarily for custom web applications, but those known vulnerabilities in, you know, the shell shocks, the Drupalgeddons, the, you know, all the WordPress flaws. So many, many, many flaws are web-related and some good ones. So you can also hit more custom flaws. So, you know, searching for SQLi flaws. But really there's a lot of opportunity here. Exploitation of Heartbleed, exploitation of shell shock. It can do many of those. And also be on the lookout for auxiliary scanners. So we have auxiliary scanners possibly with Metasploit that allow you to scan for those vulnerabilities to see if they're present prior to exploitation. Okay, so let's talk Drupal, because this is something you're going to use Metasploit to go after in the next little lab. So Drupal is a content management system, one of the most popular. So WordPress, Drupal, Joomla are the three most popular. Drupal is a very popular one, and this content management system had a rather significant flaw in 2014 that came to be known as Drupalgeddon or Drupageddon, right, depending upon, you know, how you read it. But this was a flaw in Drupal, and just in general, content management systems are extremely high-value targets as web applications. So WordPress, Joomla, Drupal, these are high-value targets. One, because their attack surface is pretty high, lots of plugins, lots of extensions, and that's true of WordPress, that's true of Drupal, that's true of Joomla. We extend the capabilities of these tools with third-party code. That might not be that secure, that might be pretty poorly coded, and that seems to happen with some regularity. But they're also high-value targets, not just because of the likelihood of vulnerability, but also because of the capabilities that they afford the adversary. Adversary takes control of your CMS, they take control of the entirety of your site, the entirety of your presence. So this is pretty significant. And they are high-value targets for the adversary. So big attack surface, lots of vulnerabilities potentially, and extreme impact with respect to your presence. So let's talk about that Drupalgeddon. This was October 2014, and it's an unauthenticated SQL injection flaw. Okay, unauthenticated SQL injection flaw for a default Drupal install. So no plugins required, no busted plugins, no authentication required. So unauthenticated SQL injection flaw. If exploited, it could allow unfettered access to all of the data. It could allow remote code execution as the CMS, and it allowed for local privilege escalation to oftentimes lead to root control of the underlying operating system. So not just taking over the CMS, you've taken over the entire box at this point. So pretty significant flaw, and it's an unauthenticated flaw, which is kind of scary. Turned out this was just nuts. So Drupal released the details. They released the patch. They said, hey, by the way, this is pretty significant. Here's a security flaw. Here's an update. Drupal security team then sent out this public service announcement later that day that said, hey, by the way, if you haven't already patched, don't worry about it because you're already owned. Within 7 hours, right? 7 hours. 7 hours after the announcement, they said that if you had a Drupal 7 install that hadn't been patched, within 7 hours, they said you needed to assume that it had already been compromised. Ouch. So depending upon where you were in the world, some folks woke up in the morning and they hadn't even seen the announcement about the patch. It came out while they were asleep. They were still asleep and their site had already been compromised. Ouch, that's pretty nasty. So 7 hours after the vulnerability, then it's potentially full on exploitation. You were supposed to proceed under the assumption that every Drupal 7 website was compromised. Gory details. It was an unauthenticated SQLi. What was a bit ironic and a bit strange. Drupal uses prepared statements. One of the main reasons to use prepared statements is to avoid SQL injection flaws. But prepared statements and in clauses don't play well, right? They don't play well with prepared statements. So in clauses like this, select splat from users where name is in, and we give it a list. Prepared statements, they don't play well with this. So Drupal included a special function called expand arguments. So it takes arrays, it explodes them, specifically to allow you to handle those ins, okay? Handle the SQL in, and still be able to use prepared statements. So ironically, what got them popped was them trying to make it so that you could use prepared statement to avoid SQL injection flaws, right? So that's just kind of ironic, yeah? So this gets into even more gory details, but it was unfiltered input to this expand arguments, and this was built in effectively. So every Drupal 7 install was vulnerable and then popped within 7 hours, or that was the assumption. So there's a Metasploit exploit for this. Please note the lack of an L. There different announcements, different posts called it Drupalgeddon or Drupageddon. I don't know why. the Metasploit module is called Drupageddon, okay, with no L. So it's a Metasploit module. You set up your options, you type exploit, and then, hey, you get magic, right? So you've got an exercise, and in this exercise, you're going to be exploiting a Drupalgeddon flaw. You're going to be exploiting a Drupal CMS to gain access to it. We're also going to have you do something else. So you're going to exploit shell shock. We've exploited shell shock by hand previously, right? You're going to be exploiting shell shock via the use of Metasploit. So you could get potentially a meterpreter if you wanted to, rather than just the little command execution that we were doing. So first off, we say, hey, just for good measure, you can run those two commands, config-static, which is going to, again, reset your interface, primarily if you had reached out to the internet or set up NAT or something, And then we're restarting the web server. At this point, we decide, hey, you've done enough damage to it. Might as well, let's give Apache a break. You know, let's restart it before we smack it even further, just for good measure. Then kick off the MSF console. If you want it to look exactly like this, just keep typing banner until it shows that, because it's just going to randomly pick one. So it won't necessarily look like exactly that when you launch it. But just keep typing banner until you get the one you want, and then you can go forth. So there's three different paths through this one. There's the, hey, the no hints version. The no hints version, which we just say, do this, exploit Drupal. This is where the site is, and here's the module that we want you to use for the payload. And exploit shell shock. Here's where it is. Here's the payload we want, and we want you to proxy it via burp. Okay, so that's the first path, which is no hints at all. You go forth. Another one is kind of partial hints. You follow the step-by-step instructions for Drupal, and then you use what you learned exploiting Drupal to then try to go after shell shock without any hints. And of course, the other option is to just go full on step by step for each and every one of these. All right, so choose your own difficulty adventure and get your shells on. Oh, what do we got? Use exploit. Well, how about this? Search Drupal. Well, let's try search Drupal, see what it says. What we got? Well, there's one that pops up, Drupalgeddon already. Yeah. So use exploit multi HTTP Drupal 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 Drupal. Okay. Show options. What do we got? Proxies. We can do a proxy chain. Eh, not yet. What do we need? You're supposed to do payload of what? PHP. Oh, interpreter PHP. This is not. I think we actually looked at this before, didn't we? Yeah, when I did the MSF Venom and the RFI. That's right. So you saw this before, if nothing else. Set rhost to Drupal. Or, you know, that's for us. And lhost is actually us. Lhost. This didn't used to work with lhost 127.0.0.1, but apparently it does now. All right, so we good? Patoins. Oh my gosh, I cannot spell that word apparently. Ah! Okay, so now we see our defaults. So we have more options once we set our payload because these are the payload specific options. Default Metasploit port 4444. We got Drupal, we got R port of 80, that's the default. Target URI of slash, again, that's the default. So we don't have to, you know, if it were under some subdirectory, something like that, then we would need to put that in, but we should be okay at this point. Exploit, let's see. No whammy, no whammy, no whammy. Stop! Yay! Interpreter session one opened. Give it to me. Give it back, give it back. Drop it, drop it. Look, it's a dog, right? I'm ready to throw the Frisbee. Oh, sorry. Get UID, get GID. GID, oh, whatever. So question mark, right? Remember we had our run post scripts and there's just a couple of them, okay? So we might want to go Linux and then tab tab. So not there's not nearly as much stuff. There are a tremendous volume of PostScripts. There's not nearly as many for Linux. Do also, just as a heads up, there are a number under multi that are more widely applicable. So they might work on Linux. Not necessarily the case, but just a heads up there. Okay, there's a number under multi. There's more under multi than under Linux. Background. So now we still have that session open. Sessions tack L. We'll show it to you. But we're going to use the next one. So some of you tried to do this via search shell shock. Any love? Any love? Yeah, you get some love. But these are not the ones that we suggest that you use. Well, because this is specific to Pure FTPD. This is specific to cups. DH client, that's the client side one. So that's you hosting it and tricking a client that's vulnerable to then connect into you. So that was a common thought with respect to Android. Right, so Android, the Android client. So, all right, let's, the shell shock is also known as the bash bug. So you could try searching for bash and see if you find more. And you do find a lot more. And you'll find the one that is associated with Apache CGI. So this is it, Apache mod CGI. This is the one that we were suggesting that you use. So let's do this. Right. Ah. Okay. Show me my options. All right. We're good here. Oh, you want to set a proxy, right? Set proxies. And then we have to tell it what type of proxy, because you don't just have to use HTTP. You have other options. And then we need to hit 81 or 82. Okay. Is that burp? I do not have burp running. Run, burp, run. Okay. So am I good to go? What do I need? I've got an exploit, but I've got no target. I've got no payload, so I got to hit somebody and get rid of it. All right. Who's my R host? Shellshock. Apparently. Oh, that's bad. I'm gonna not type that right, am I? Now this one actually we need the target URI. And this is the one that we found before. So CGI bin / netstat.cgi. Does that look right? Payload, well, I'll show you something. Set lhost. Why do you not love me? No. I don't think so. So, see, I did totally not the right casing at all, and yeah. It still picked it up, so I don't think they care, but it's not tab completing for me. Oh, because I haven't set a payload, so I don't have a listen host. It's like, what is wrong with you? So set payload, and which one are we using now? Linux x86 shell, and we are using a reverse. Okay. We got some options now. You set your listen. Listen port is default 4444. And listen host, set L host. Now it'll tab complete. And 127.0.0.1. Okay. All right. Hold on. We'll come to this. Okay. So there's another option, and this one's not nearly as obvious. Okay, and doesn't even show it to you here, right? So this is your options, and we're now setting an option that's not even that's not listed. So we're setting reverse allow proxy to true to allow it to come back through the proxy, right? So it's gonna go out on the way, right? It's gonna go out through burp on the way, and this is suggesting that it will allow it to come back through burp potentially. To see some of that is you'd have to do show advanced, and there's just a couple of options under there, right? So there's many more options that you've got. It's just that show options doesn't show you all of them. And some of them are just kind of, you just have to learn through banging your head against it. All right. I don't remember if I've said anything. We'll try it. Did you see where's it actually going to perform the injection? Did you notice that? It's going to do it in the user agent. So that's customizable. It also says that it's going to be a get method. So let's try this. It's 100.61% done. That's extra awesome. It's 822 of 817 bytes? What just happened here? I don't know, but it works, so I ain't gonna question it. I have no clue. It might be it could be laughing at me. I want to show you that Metasploit's gotten smarter than it used to be. So I've got a listener on 4444 already, right? And I didn't change my L port. Now, some exploits, we'll just say it does not work well. So always best practice to choose different L ports, but it will often work even if you don't choose a different L port nowadays, right? But that's, you know, that's modern Metasploit. Okay. Anything else? We're just going to kill it. We're done. Okay. And we'll come back to, we'll come back and look at exploitation more. So I highlighted a few different things. In particular, I mean, the main use case for Metasploit with web applications is exploitation of known vulnerabilities. But there are other possibilities in there with things like WMAP. And really, absolutely do keep an eye on the auxiliary scanners, because some of them are pretty darn good and can be effective and make it so that you don't have to even run, or possibly make it so that you can find vulnerabilities that you weren't aware existed even without a web app vulnerability scanner, right? Or a network vulnerability scanner, more likely. Now, that's fine. That's lovely. We had a proof of concept from ExploitDB that worked. Yay, it worked right out of the box. We had, you know, two little exploits here, Shellshock and Drupalgeddon, that worked, again, out of the box. But now let's talk about one that doesn't work out of the box, right? You will often find yourself trying to test out, you will see, maybe you run WPScan, you see a WordPress vulnerability, or you run Nikto or HTTP/Enum, and you see something that's installed, you determine the version that's installed, that's a known vulnerable version, maybe you do the search exploit in ExploitDB, you find a one-off exploit, it's supposed to work for this version, you look at it a little bit, you launch it, it fails. What do you do? Well, one option, give up. Another option, try harder, right? This is a common occurrence, especially with web apps and off-the-shelf exploits, right? People will generate proof-of-concept exploits for their target environment, and you have to go in and customize it for your own environment or the environment that you're targeting of your clients. So things don't always work as beautifully as they do in the labs or in game scenarios. So you find a vulnerability. You use a tool that has a matching exploit. Either you grab one from ExploitDB, you use it in Metasploit, right? Metasploit, I'd prefer to use that if it's in Metasploit. It's more likely to be successful. ExploitDB, I mean, that can be a one-off one that doesn't work except for that person's environment. Very, very particular. So Metasploit, I would just assume, is higher fidelity. But even then, use it. You launch the exploit via Metasploit, and it fails. So, is it you? Is it Metasploit? Is it, hey, maybe the vulnerability isn't actually present? Maybe they somehow backported a patch, and who knows? But this is problematic. It looks like it's vulnerable, but you're not able to exploit it. One of the reasons it suggests that we do penetration testing is to reduce the incidence of false positives. So do you now have a false positive on your hands? Maybe. You really might. But especially if you have not used this exploit before, which is commonplace, it really is. You know, we use a lot of exploits newly, the first time on engagements that we've never tried before. So especially if that's the case, I would suggest if you have the ability and you have the time and inclination, bring it into your lab, install whatever the service is, and see if you can get it to pop on your own lab. But you, if nothing else, I would say absolutely, at least due diligence would suggest that you need to read a little bit about the exploit. read the information, read some references about it, and look to see if you can figure out why it's failing. Sometimes it's not that difficult to do. So we don't want to just sit back and report this and say, yeah, it's vulnerable. Well, how do you know it's vulnerable? Well, it said the right version, but when I tried the exploit that's supposed to be for that vulnerability, it didn't work. That doesn't leave a great taste in my mouth. I mean, if I can't exploit it, that's fine. And I will say it's a vulnerability, and I will say it's possibly a high vulnerability. I wasn't able to exploit it successfully. Doesn't mean it's not vulnerable. It just means I wasn't able to exploit it. That's okay. But we would absolutely prefer the case that we grind a little bit and don't give up and try to figure out if we can exploit it successfully. Okay? Do always be mindful of time constraints, though. I mean, that's always working against us as pen testers. Unfortunately, it doesn't nearly as much work against the adversaries, right? They will take all the time necessary to achieve their goal if they have a potentially substantial payoff at the end of it. So let's look at researching a vulnerability. So here's one. This is a vulnerability, CVE 2014-1610. We installed the MediaWiki on a server, and this one you've seen already. So this is the one that you found via the DNS brute forcing. Or actually, this might have been the pointer. No, I don't remember which one it was. It was one of those that was not immediately obvious. It was at sec542.com, and we had to struggle a little bit to find this one. But you found it. You also saw references to this in later labs, right? I pointed you to this in the SQL injection lab when you were playing with SQL Map, I believe it was. I had you search to figure out where the passwords were stored for these accounts, right? So we installed this MediaWiki. We installed a version that had a known vulnerability that was supposed to be a high fidelity, easy to exploit. We're building labs off of it. We get to this point, and we're building a lab for this and get some fails. It didn't work. Hey, it's supposed to work. We intentionally installed a version that had this vulnerability. We've already built this into other labs, and we want to build this, and it starts failing on us. So, what do you do? Well, here's the exploit. One thing, you can use the exploit, you can type show info. Show info gives you some heads-up display, nice little details about the exploit in question within Metasploit. And we did this. And we looked at the references. So in the info of the exploit, it points you to references and says, hey, CVE details, OSVDB, checkpoint, Bugzilla, right? Gave us some different references. So we hit the first one. First one says, hey, there's a public exploit available. Well, we know, we're playing with it in Metasploit, right? It's supposed to be able to work right here. But it says there's a public exploit available. We go and look at the one-off proof of concept exploit, not the Metasploit exploit. We go look at the one-off, and here's what it suggests. It says, upload, right here, it's giving you step by step. Upload longcat.pdf to Wikimedia CMS site with PDF handler enabled. Okay, gives you the details. Inject OS command to upload a PHP backdoor, right? And great. And now with this PHP backdoor shell, access it and look at the command they're running. So what's going on here? This PHP that they're putting in, the vulnerability is actually in this W parameter. It's the width, and the W parameter is flawed. It keeps on, the way it's passed in is flawed, and it allows us to add in some extra information. And so what we can do is we can add in, here we go, PHP system get, and we're getting the a parameter of 1. So question 1 equal, right? So getting a parameter named 1, and when they, right, this is a proof of concept exploit, we don't want to do this. The command that they're showing is rmrf /no preserve. Now, thankfully, if you just ran it as is, it would not work because they really probably mean no preserve root. Not just no preserve, it's a typo, but I'm going to say thankful typo. This is why you don't just grab exploits and throw them without knowing what they do at all, right? Because if you ran this and it was successful and there wasn't a typo, you would recursively and forcibly delete everything starting at root. Oh, and you wouldn't even keep root safe, right? That's what no preserve root does. You'll even delete yourself. Ouch, that's just not nice. So that's kind of scary. But what's nice about this is we started looking through the details and said, hey, right, we can see kind of a little bit what's going on here. And so let's go and look at what Metasploit's doing. Of course, it's open source, so we can look at the Ruby. It is Ruby, though, right? But we can look at the info. What's going on? We tried to do the exploit, just, you know, setting all the options, hitting exploit. No love. Here's the issue. So we have to have a file that's already there. Okay, the file is expected to already be there and have been uploaded. If the file name is blank, Metasploit will upload it for you, and it uploads this metasploit.djvu. Okay. It's renamed. That's default behavior. It didn't work. Didn't work for us. That was default. We just left it. We ran it. Didn't work. If the file name is not blank, okay, so we're going to use our own file. We're going to slap in a PDF or something like this, right? It will try to it expects that it's already actually there, that you've uploaded it, that you're choosing a file that's already there. If you don't put one, it'll try to upload it, and it tries to upload a DJVU. If you put one, that you have manually uploaded, well, apparently the deja vu doesn't work, but the PDF worked for us. So we have to manually upload a PDF and then use that same name PDF, and then suddenly it starts to work. So it was just odd, and that wasn't explained directly in the exploit. But we're banging our head against something that we know to be vulnerable, and we know it's the vulnerable version, and it should be exploitable. Okay, everything suggests it should be exploitable, but a little bit of poking, and we figure out what the behavior is. So now you're going to play with this, and you're going to learn from our mistakes, as it were, and tweak things on your own to exploit this wiki that's installed. So your goal is to configure Metasploit to exploit this media wiki site using some default options, right? And you'll get the fail. So fail. The expectation is that it fails initially, so get the fail. Now you're going to manually launch the exploit. Then you're going to configure Metasploit appropriately. So the target is this, cust42, not 542, cust42.sec542.com/mwiki. Okay? And we saw this with the forced browse exercise after we had done the DNS brooding and found cust42. All right? So the metaname generator indicates the version for you. So this could allow you to look in ExploitDB. This could allow you to know that this vulnerability is supposed to work. All right. So find the vulnerability, find the exploit, and try to exploit it, and then look at going through it manually and tweaking it to actually get it to work in Metasploit.